Hello and welcome to the Coast to Coast College Admissions Podcast. Each week, we talk about different college admissions topics and answer those tough questions you may be dealing with concerning getting into the college of your choice. We know how difficult this process can be, so each week, we try and make it easier to navigate. Now, here's your host, Anna Wren and Mark Huffer.
Well, hello and happy new year. Welcome to the Coast to Coast College Admissions Podcast. Today, we're going to be talking about a very timely January subject of decisions, as in admissions decisions. My name is Mark Hofer, and I am joined by
Anna Wren.
Hi, Anna. How are you doing this new year?
I'm well. How are you, Mark?
I'm very good. We've got a snap of cold weather here in Seattle. How about you?
It's actually really warm today on the East Coast. We're in the 60s.
Boy, we could sure use that. We are definitely in the 30s.
So it's kind of like we reversed for the coast for this winter day.
Exactly. Well, I said timely for January, and I think a lot of students who applied early application process, they have heard already whether they have been accepted or deferred or rejected in some cases. And I think we decided it would be a good time to talk about the different kinds of early decision, early action, restrictive early action, and some of those things mean. Have you had students who've already been accepted to schools?
Yes. So that's the great news. It's like I was telling someone, it's a tough season for us because at the same time, we are so overjoyed, but at the same time, we can be totally heartbroken at the same time. Because just depending on what the results roll in like for each of our students. But I've been blessed. We've had some acceptances. But, you know, we've also had some deferrals. And I've received so many questions that, you know, this is why I figure it would be a great time for us to talk about, you know, what the benefits are of applying early and the different types of applications or deadlines there are out there. How about you?
Yeah, this was a blessing year. We've already had a couple of students who have received notice that they've got early decision and early action. I even had a student who had restrictive early action at Stanford, and which is an unusual one that I don't think all students know about. And there are some schools that offer that application process. So it's a unique one in its own. But what's even better is when you apply early and you find out that you're receiving financial aid that makes it even more appealing than just getting accepted.
Absolutely, because then you realize it actually is possible to attend that school in most cases. So we've thrown a lot of terminology out there for our listeners.
Exactly.
Let's dive in and let's talk a little bit about what the different deadlines are. Do you want to talk about maybe like early decision and early action and then the differences, and then we can talk about what restrictive means as well?
You bet. Yeah, I think so we can all have something common to talk about, we'll kind of define what each one of those different processes mean and what those terms mean. So early decision, one of the biggest parts of early decision is you apply early. So you have to be on your A game and get everything in, which is difficult in a lot of situations. But if you are on the ball and you're able to get everything in by November, for early decision, if you get accepted, it's binding. And that's the one thing that you need to know. You apply to a school, it's binding, and you're going to hear probably in mid-December, usually around the 15th, and you'll find out whether you are accepted or not. And generally, if you are headed that direction, it's basically you've identified a school that you really are interested in. And then early action, you want to talk about early action?
Sure. And then the other thing I would just want to touch upon is some people still, like, I don't know if you've ever had this happen to you, but they still don't understand what binding means. And binding means it's actually a legal agreement that you sign as part of your application and your parents sign it too. And I think typically sometimes a guidance counselor, I think, also has to sign something as well, acknowledging that this is a legal agreement, meaning if you are accepted that you will attend the school.
Exactly.
And as a result, I mean, sometimes there are advantages to that. And we can talk about that a little later. But in terms of early action, it's the same as early decision in that, you know, you have to be on your A game and you have to get your materials in early, typically around November 1st. Some can be a little earlier. I've seen deadlines that are October 15th, but they can also range to November 15th as well. But it's around that range. And the only difference is it's not legally binding. So come time in December, typically, when you find out, if you are accepted, you don't have to go. Some students like this as an option just because they might want to hear what they get back from other schools, including those financial aid packages that you had mentioned earlier, Mark.
Exactly. You bring up one really important point, and I think that is, as you identified, the rules for individual schools can be slightly different, and they can change from year to year. So what one school requires for early decision and what they allow you to do may be different from one school to another. And so it's really important that if you are looking at particular schools, you know the rules that they have regarding what kind of applications and what other applications that you can file and apply for. So you talked about financial aid offerings, and I think if there is one thing about early action that I think is really appealing for those students who are going to need financial aid, I think that's the one thing I tell them. Early action is definitely a direction that they might want to look, as opposed to early decision, which takes away that option.
I would say the same thing. And I find that students who pick early action, one of the benefits of early action is having those options. So now that we've talked a little bit about that, let's talk about restrictive
early
action, because I feel like a lot of students and parents have questions about that as well. And you mentioned a little bit of it earlier with Stanford. Do you want to deep dive into that?
Sure. Restrictive early action is kind of the best of all possible worlds for a student, in that they actually have done their due diligence. They've looked into a school that they are particularly interested in. They put all their ducks in a row and they're able to apply early. So they basically are only restrictive in that they put in one early application to only one school. But the restrictive part is, if they're accepted, they're not required to accept. So it's not that legally binding part of early decision. So it has, you know, components of the best of all worlds, especially for the student.
You're absolutely right. And there's actually many different iterations of restrictive early action as well, even with early decision. So I do recommend that, you know, for each family, as you look at these policies, that you do pay attention to the details, because there are some schools that you can apply early decision and then you cannot apply early action anywhere else. And then there are schools, for example, like Princeton, which lets you apply early action similar to Stanford, only to their school, but you're not allowed to apply early action or decision to any other private school. The interesting thing is they will let you apply early action to other public schools.
You know, I didn't know that. I just learned something. I didn't know that they restricted it to private, or that they won't let you apply. And let me make sure I understand that. They won't let you apply to private institutions, but they will let you apply to public institutions.
Early action, yes. Obviously not for the early decision, but still they will let you apply to any public school early action in addition to their restrictive early action application.
And that's why every year it seems to change a little bit, and it's really important to check up. I'm glad I learned something today.
It does, and it's so insane because, like you said, they change year to year. And another one is, for example, Georgetown, where they are early action, and they will allow you to apply to any other early action program, but you are not allowed to apply to any early decision program.
Exactly. So,
there's just these little nuances that I would, you know, recommend that, you know, our listeners, you know, look out for.
Absolutely. And especially when we're talking about something like early decision, where it is, as you noted, it's a legally binding situation in which not only is the student signing something, a lot of times the parents, as well as a school counselor, are all acknowledging that they know what the rules are and that it is a legally binding relationship.
So let's talk a little bit about that, because it seems like heavy stuff, like, wow, this is a legal agreement that we're signing. But what are the benefits, I guess, to early decision, would you say?
So, well, I'll ask you, how many of the students that you work with, how many of them do you suggest, on just a percentage of them, do you suggest apply either early action or early decision?
I recommend it to all my students that they apply for either or. But typically, I would say if they really know what they want and their family has kind of done the research financially, then, you know, it might make sense to do early decision. But otherwise, I think early action is a great way to go, just because it tells us a little bit about, hopefully we can get a safety in there. So they'll have less stress as we go into the regular season. But also, it also helps us gauge what, you know, the future schools look like that we haven't applied to yet. But, you know, it can, I think I get like it's an uneven breakout. I would say maybe 20% of my students do early decision, and then the rest do early action.
Exactly. I'm with you. I push it really hard. And I think a lot of education consultants actually do as well. And the reason being, there are so many good parts about preparing early. And I think it does kind of, it holds a carrot in front of a student to basically move towards a little bit earlier deadline. And I think getting those things in, you know, getting them in early allows you to enjoy a little bit more of your senior year, in that you have got the ball well in play, and you'll be able to field whatever comes a little bit earlier, and all your ducks are started to get in a row as well. One of the things I really think is a huge part, and you mentioned stress on not only the student knowing something early, but also the family. If you know what kind of things are going to come down the pike in the following year, it allows you to prepare for finances, it allows you to look for housing and all kinds of things like that are associated with college. And if you have that buffer of time, that's invaluable. And I think it takes a lot of the stress away.
That's a great point. And I was, as you were talking, I thought of this anecdote from this admission season to help people kind of understand early decision versus early action and what some of the benefits might be. So there was a very competitive high school, and they had 5 students apply to the same school. 2 of them applied early decision, and 3 of them applied early action. Now, these are all, you know, equally competitive, like well-qualified candidates. So the 2 early decisions got in, and then they only took 1 of the early actions. And I think what it speaks to is early decision does offer that commitment. So I feel like when you apply early decision to a school, especially if they have both options, early decision and early action, I think that has something to say about demonstrated interest, but also I think you're also actually committing, financially committing as well, which sometimes I think can be a benefit as well.
Absolutely. I think you hit the nail right on the head in that I think schools, in a previous podcast, we talked about showing schools the love. And I think admissions will tell you they want students to show them that they've practiced their due diligence and that their school is definitely someplace that they're very interested in and have done their homework. So I think when schools see an early decision or an early action come across their desk, they take it a little bit more seriously, and that they know that this student has really considered them with a much finer focus than they would in the general population or general application pool. So one of the things that I've noticed that when students are told for something like early decision, they only get 1 application. Well, in some ways, it gives you a chance to focus, and you only have to do 1 application. So if you actually get accepted, you don't have to do any more. And that, I think, for a lot of students, if you frame it in that, put your time and energy and focus into one, you know, best fit school, that you're really interested in. And if you get in, you don't have to do any of the other work in the other applications.
So that brings me to a good question, actually, Mark. Some of my students do ask, if I apply early decision somewhere, or early action, does that mean I have to send in other applications or prepare other applications for the regular round? And what would you say?
Yeah, there's two ways to look at that. The one that I really try to let students know is if you are focusing on one school and you're doing early applications, if you are answering those questions, there is so much similarity between schools and their applications that even if you take the time to focus on that one school, if you have to do other applications, and you probably should get things in a row just in case, a lot of the work that you do is going to carry over. So you're not having to reinvent the wheel every time. So I tell them it's a really great idea.
I would agree. And, you know, we usually try to have the additional applications in the wings, as I like to put it, just in case, just as a backup plan.
Agreed. One of the, you mentioned that you gave the example that the percentage of students that got an early decision who applied that route, their acceptance rate was a little bit higher. I think one of the ways to frame that, not as many applicants apply early decision or early action. So the pool of applicants is actually smaller. So a school can actually look at those applications with a little bit more discerning eye. I think that increases the chances of getting a really good look. And I think because of the smaller number of applicants, although the applicants are probably those students who are on the ball and have a pretty good story and good academics to bring to the table, the chances of them being accepted are a little bit higher.
And yes, in most cases that is true. And there's other benefits as well, which we'll get to in a second. But who do you think should not apply early action?
Either. There's a couple of things. The main one is if you are going to be needing substantial financial aid, you want to see the packages that other schools can provide. That's just one thing to keep in mind. The other thing is, have you practiced your due diligence? Do you know why you're going to school, what kind of schools you're looking for, and make sure that you're looking at schools that are best fit? Have you done those things ahead of time? If you haven't, then it's probably not a great way. And then the last thing is, if you need to take either the SAT or ACT again, and you're hoping for a higher score, you can't actually, a lot of times you're going to take that test after the deadline has passed for early applications.
That's a great point. And I think the only caveat I would say is this is especially true for early decision applicants, because early action, you can in most cases wait for additional options to come in the regular round. But the thing to keep in mind, I think, is I had spoken with someone in admissions at a school in California, and they had said that if you need substantial financial aid, it's best to apply in the early round when they still have, I guess you could say, a lot of money in the pot and a lot of spaces. And because they start to discern a little more, depending on the school you're applying to, money or financial aid may factor into some decisions at some schools in the country. So if you really need that financial aid, that was the advice, is not necessarily apply early decision, but early action.
Yeah, I've heard that from admissions representatives as well, in that if you are applying early, they know what their budget is, and they know how much money that they can provide students for financial aid. And I think having, you know, a known quantity student, somebody who is excellent, in front of them, and that they can look at that, their budget, and be able to basically plan for that ahead of time, then there's probably a chance that financial aid is available. And I've seen that with the financial aid, especially this year, the financial aid packages that have been available to students who applied early action has been really well.
And then for some schools also, along with financial aid, is if you get it in early, you'll be considered for merit scholarships as well. So if you have, if you're a part of a background where you don't think you're going to get much aid in terms of financial need, then you may want to consider and looking into how they consider merit. And a lot of them do have earlier deadlines for merit aid consideration.
Yeah. So, Anna, if you have a student who has applied early decision and, you know, unfortunately, they received the letter that says they've been denied or rejected, what does that mean to them if they've applied early decision?
Well, first of all, I know they're very disappointed. And, you know, I think what it means for us is if they were denied or rejected, which is very different from a deferral, it means we might have to take a look at their list again, because I think on some level, it means we weren't the most qualified for that school. And we might have overshot it a little bit. So it would just be a reminder for us to revisit and then look at other schools that might offer similar programs and activities and the like, but might not be as competitive, where they might be a better fit.
Agreed. One of the things that I've found myself in trying to make, if that situation actually happens where they are rejected, I try to set students up just mentally, I think, to make that sting a little less, in that when I talk about applying to schools and we start, you know, identifying a list, a lot of times I'll tell them, do not focus on one school, because there are so many things that are outside of their control. They could have the most incredible, you know, application, but because of certain things that are happening at the school, demographics of the student body, or what they're looking for that year, they may not get in. And so there are things outside their control that if they focus on just one school, they can get their heart broken. So I've kind of come up with a little bit of advice in that they should focus on three schools, meaning they know that they're all good fits and that they love going to any one of them. And a lot of times, if they've identified schools that truly are best fit, at least one of them, they'll find that they'll get the admission.
That's a great piece of advice. And, you know, those best fit schools can come in all different sizes and packages, I would also say. Because some students expect a certain something, but I think you'd be surprised. Because I know, for example, I've had students who got into schools that they would like, but then surprisingly, they also got like great merit aid plus acceptance into some special programs. And sometimes that can make a difference too, and can kind of might make it also an ideal school if they were to be rejected at another one of their top choices.
You bet. So when a student is applying early action, there are a couple of things, or a couple of different results that can happen, and different messages they'll receive from schools. What are the different kinds of results that can happen from early action?
So I think we covered one. You could be, you can receive, unfortunately, a letter of being rejected or denied. So we covered that a little bit. I think the only note I would say is that if you are rejected or denied, it means that they will not be reviewing your application again in the regular decision round. But the other two are obviously the great one of being accepted, and also the one that's kind of confusing for some families, and that's a deferral. So would you like to speak to deferrals, Mark?
Well, in deferrals, it basically, and there again, this is one of the things that I think encouraging students to apply early really sets up a best win situation. Even if you get deferred, even if you get rejected, you have that, you basically establish a foundation for applying to schools, and you have things that you've thought about and you put them down on paper, and you've actually got documentation of answers to essay questions. So I actually see the deferral as a time to sit back. You know, you're applying to other schools, and you're able to identify and reflect on what might be the best, you know, fit and the reasons why you might have been rejected, but also in tightening up your application and making it even stronger. You've got that time, that buffer.
Mm, that's absolutely true. And I just realized we didn't really talk about what a deferral is. So what is a deferral, Mark? What does it mean?
You bet. Yeah. And that's the thing. I think students often misrepresent what deferral means. And it does not mean that you're rejected. It's highly competitive in the early action process. And when you apply early, they don't take but a handful of people. They're trying to make sure that they are attracting the very best fit students for their college. But in some cases, they see somebody that they really want to take, but they can't based on the numbers. So what they do is they're not rejecting them. They're actually saying, we're deferring you. And in most cases, what that means is that you are being looked at within the general population, the general application pool.
Absolutely. And I think that's why, like, most students think, like, I feel like they react as if it's a rejection when they get a deferral. But I always like to remind them, no, it just means you have a second chance. So you get almost two rounds for that school. And it does mean, you know, you're qualified. Like you said, unfortunately, there's just not enough spots right now.
One of the things I tell them when I've run internships, and one of the things I tell students, this is a lot like applying for a job or applying for an internship, in that if you submit something and you submitted it at a time when they can really review it and they know you well and there's name identification and recognition, then when it comes back into the pool, like you mentioned, they get a second look. That can actually work much to their advantage.
Absolutely. So what would you say, like, how do you advise your students? Like, what, because some of them are probably asking, like, I'm deferred, now what?
Absolutely. Well, one of the first things I suggest is they take a step back. They look at their application. They see if there are weaknesses that now with a second look, they notice. And then I also tell them to revisit and really think about best fit and applying to schools that are, you know, have a really good fit with what they're looking and what the school provides, and making sure that they are truly looking at best fit schools that will serve them well when they're in college.
And sometimes it can be a blessing in disguise, because I've had students that were rejected or deferred and later didn't. But, you know, what ended up happening is once you are deferred from, say, whether it be early action or early decision, you're released from that agreement.
Agreed.
In most cases. So if you did apply early decision to a school and you were deferred, then all of a sudden one of the upsides is you have options now in the regular decision round, and you're no longer committed to that one school.
Exactly. I think you mentioned, you know, some things happen for a reason and it can be better, in that I think of all the students I know who have been either rejected or deferred, either early action or early decision, the school that they ended up attending, all but one case do I remember the students being elated and saying afterwards, this is such a great school. I can't imagine myself anywhere else. And I think a lot of that has to do with taking that step back and reflecting on what is a best fit school for you.
Absolutely. And sometimes you're in the rush, and if you don't get to work with someone and get help, like, sometimes you might not pinpoint the best fit the first time. So your best fit might come later on, I think. And so I've definitely had a student who was rejected from her early decision and then deferred at another early action. And then she got into most of her other school's regular decision. And she's like, oh my gosh, I don't know why I ever applied early decision to that school. I would have hated it. And I'm like, see, now that you have more time to research, you know, it all worked out.
Exactly. I think that's one of the most interesting things about working with teenagers during this process is how quickly, you know, with some added information, they can turn from something being devastating to something being the greatest turn of their possibilities and what's available to them. So I think that's a really important thing, to always stay positive in that you don't know what's around the corner.
That's true. So what would you say, because I have hard action items for my kids when they're deferred. Do you have some for yours too?
When you say hard action items, well, the main one, the main question I ask students is, why do you want to go to college? And a lot of students can answer that superficially, but very seldom does a student sit down and really answer that question authentically in, why am I going to college? What kind of skills do I want to learn over the 4 years so that when I walk across that stage, I'm excited about my future? And I think if they do those hard questions early, a lot of times everything else seems to fall in place much easier, especially things like answering essay questions that have to do with why are you choosing us and why are you wanting to come join us for your education?
And those are actually the same questions that I ask, and I have them detail if they are genuinely interested in the school that's deferred them. Because oftentimes, depending on why we think they may have been deferred, and sometimes schools are great because they'll just tell you right off the bat, this is what we need to reconsider you for regular decision. But some are not. But I always like recommend, you know, send in your semester grade. So usually you only send in the first quarter. So by the time you get your results, you'll have time to send in your second quarter too. So you can kind of continue to show the school that, hey, this is like me, and you know, I'm really committed to my academics and things like that, especially if their grades weren't necessarily what they had wanted them to be earlier in their high school career, along with updates on accomplishments sometimes. And then some schools, depending, would also welcome a letter of demonstrated interest that we had talked about also as well, just reaffirming that, you know, this is their top choice and so on and so forth.
I'm so glad you mentioned that. And that's one thing that we've heard. I know that we consistently hear from admissions representatives that students' grade point is important. But more important is that if there isn't a perfect grade point, which very few people have, that it's an upward trend. If you didn't have a great freshman year in high school, and you show that over time it's definitely an upward trend, some students will benefit greatly by having that extra time at the end of their senior year to show colleges that they really are focused on their academics and they really do have an A game.
That's a great point you raised. So what are some questions that you think people have or you've received regarding, you know, whether it be early action, early decision, results, anything?
One of the things that I think, and we mentioned this early on, and it's often a little bit scary when you're talking about early decision, because those people who have a hard time committing to something and a hard time realizing that, you know, if I sign this, it's a legal document in early decision. And I think that scares some people away. But I think it also is kind of a carrot for working with students who want to identify, this is the best school for me. It has everything I'm looking for. I'm a match for that school and the school's a match for me. And I think that's one thing that I try to let students know. While it is a legally binding document and you are getting into a relationship that is pretty much, if they accept you, carved in stone, that is something that, you know, pushes you to ask those tough questions early.
That's a great point. And I would say one of the things is I don't know if you get this from your kids, because we didn't really talk about it, because we talked about rejection and deferral, but what if you're accepted? And my kids ask if they've early decisioned, this doesn't come up if you early action, but if you've early decisioned, they'll ask, like, do I have to retract all my applications? And I'm like, yes. Yes, now that you've been accepted early decision and hopefully are thrilled about that, yes, you have to notify all your other schools and retract/cancel the other outstanding applications.
Actually, yeah. And you bring up one point that I think is important to note. Because it is legally binding, there's only one instance that I know of that when a school has accepted you early decision, that you may be able to not accept that offer. And that's basically if the financial aid package that they're able to provide you is so far different than what you need. I believe, as far as I know, that's the only way around that. Have you heard of anything else?
No, that is also the only thing I've heard. But I would caution families that you should do the net price calculator before you apply early decision. So don't apply blindly, because it is in rare instances that even you can back out for those types of financial reasons.
I think it kind of puts on the front of mind thought, in that you really do need to make sure that when you're talking about best fit, finances and financial aid are definitely part of that consideration.
Mm-hmm. It really is. I think there are so many questions I've also had, like, so do you know anyone? Like, do you have students that ask you, like, well, I changed my mind. Can I back out for reasons other than financial aid? And what do you advise?
I've never met anybody who's backed out. I've heard of them, but I don't know anybody personally who's actually gone down that route for whatever reason. And I don't know if that's luck or if that's just that, the students that I hear about have had some pretty good guidance on why they're applying early decision in the first place and know the ramifications of if they get a spot. So luckily, I've never heard of anybody, never personally met anybody who's actually walked away from that commitment. How about you?
I personally haven't, but doing what we do as educational consultants, we're parts of different forums and boards, and it did come up recently. And someone, I guess, changed their minds, got a generous financial package from another institution before they found out about the early decision agreement, early decision results. So it really, I think, depends on the school. But in that case, if you haven't received the results yet, I think you can notify the school and try to cancel it, like cancel your application. But otherwise, I would say you really would have to go. And then, you can always transfer later. I guess the repercussions if you don't go could be not only like poor for the student, because I've heard things such as getting blacklisted at other schools if you back out of an early decision agreement.
Uh-huh. Do you know of somebody who actually has had that happen? We hear about things like that, but I don't know if I've ever met anybody who actually has any kind of evidence that a school has actually gone out of their way and used time to make sure that other universities know about their not honoring that commitment. Have you heard of anybody who actually has gone through that?
I personally have not, where they've done that, but I do know in some cases where a university or school will be much more discerning with future applications that come from that high school. So sometimes it can actually hurt future applicants.
Agreed. I guess that would be a good sign of schools and communities that provide students with good information and guidance. And I think colleges actually will take that, like you say, they'll put that into their data bank and recognize that maybe students who follow, unfortunately, might observe with a little bit more critical lens.
I think that's a great point. Because unfortunately, then you learn the hard way. I feel like for those schools. And it's obviously, and that's why I believe guidance counselors are also asked to sign part of their early decision agreements as well. So definitely, we recommend, really thinking it over before you early decision a school and to not go into that decision lightly.
Yep. I think having that early carrot deadline is, there's lots of pluses, and the few minuses are those things that are unique situations where they can be taken care of individually. But overall, I think it's a great practice for students to try to hit that deadline. Even if they don't make it, they have put the time and effort in to get their essays and get their thoughts in order.
That's a great point. So do you have any ending thoughts or questions on this topic?
No, but I'm excited to, you know, I'm excited now that students have heard, and it's always fun to hear the positive results. But one of the things that I think is really fun on the other side, when you are either rejected from a school or deferred, that it's amazing to watch how resilient, if students are able to look at it as a positive, and they take a step back and say, yeah, I can really do this essay a lot better. So I think it's a great chance to learn an important life lesson of having a little bit more extra time and attention to detail can actually be a huge benefit and a blessing.
That is a great point you raise. And I almost like to tell my students it's a time to recalibrate and potentially change or adjust our approach with the regular applications. And I just realized we totally glossed over one. So we talked a little bit about the earlies, but we didn't really talk about regular enrolling. Did you want to touch on one of them and I'll tackle the other?
Sure. Well, for regular, for general admissions, mm-hmm. and basically those are the same, you know, a lot of the same rules apply, in that, except you're fielding offers from probably more than one institution, and there again you have acceptance and you have rejections, and we don't even have time to get into, some schools actually have a second round of early decisions, but I think in the general pool you're setting up for those kind of same situations about acceptances and deferrals. How about you?
That's absolutely true. And I think, you know, the only thing is, like, so regular decision usually happens around December 1 or Jan 1, depending on the schools. And then rolling decision is, you know, they review applications as they come in. So for some students, that can be a benefit as well.
Yep. And there again, the interesting part of our college system and higher education system, different schools approach applications and even the rolling admissions and general pool in different ways. Some students find out completely off the known calendar. They'll, you know, receive a letter in the mail and find out that they got in and it wasn't supposed to happen for weeks. So that's mm-hmm. always fun, but it's a really interesting, I don't think I've ever seen anyone who says it's absolutely carved in stone for their school, and that they can give admissions acceptances anytime they want.
That's a great point. And I think that is one of the benefits, because even like some of the early actions can be rolling in this sense. Yeah. I don't think they tell you that, but I feel like I've seen those application decisions come in, especially for public universities.
It's funny you mentioned that. I had a student this year, and it was the one who applied restricted early action to Stanford. And he found out a couple days earlier than the day that they were told that they would be receiving notification. And so I got a call at 6 o'clock in the morning on Sunday. And I was really worried because I thought something had happened, and yet it was really, really good news. But sometimes you never know when it's going to happen.
That's wonderful. Yes, absolutely. I always love that. The good news when they call and they're like, oh my God, I was accepted. And then they all jump for joy. And I think with a closing note, I would just say, don't bank on the envelopes, because I feel like parents or students bank on the size of the envelope.
That's funny. The other parting shot, in the back of my mind, watching Clemson win the national title this year, I can't help but think that they are going to receive a lot more applications next year, because kids who want to go to a winning team. But I always wonder what kind of motivation they have. But I bet they're going to get more applications next year.
I definitely agree with you. I know it happens, you know, because students get swept away. It could be the tiniest reasons. It could be food, like we talked about in the past, or it could be that awesome school spirit.
Exactly. And I don't even know what kind of gelato is available on campus at Clemson, but boy, they've been considering those things.
I love that point. Well, thank you so much, Mark. I'm so glad we had a chance today to talk about decisions and deadlines. And I hope you have an awesome week.
Thank you, Anna. And I hope we get more good notices from students here in the very near future. And I hope you have a great week.
Thanks for listening to the Coast to Coast College Admissions Podcast, where we make getting into college easy and fun. Don't forget to go over to iTunes and subscribe to get updated each week when we release a new episode. Also, for more helpful college admissions information, visit our website at www.c2ccollegepodcast.com.